Hi, Maxim. How are you?
I think I sent out a status right before the show that, to be completely honest and transparent, this is going to be hard to do live broadcast today because of the fact that it's a very gruesome day. And for many Ukrainians, seeing that beheading video, this is not a normal day by any means. And I think that that something needs to be acknowledged right away.
No, yeah, for sure. It's like I posted about it yesterday that it feels like you can like hear the anger of like collectively everyone in Ukraine ever since that video was released yesterday. And it's just, yeah, it's just, you know, the other thing is that it's just crazy how used to violence many of us are. Of course, everyone's had different reactions, but my personal reaction, I'm just thinking about my reaction right now, and I just like, you know, obviously it is a new thing in a row of horrific things, and the, you know, the desensitization and the kind of hopelessness about anything changing is quite, I guess, I don't even know how to find the words to explain what these past couple of days feel like. But Maxim, I know we spoke earlier about the fact that, you know, this brought some memories for you, and you wanted to talk about, you know, the fact that this is something that Russia as a tactic has used many times before.
I totally understand you. And then you feel, on one hand, you always feel as a Ukrainian that this is something that at this point you're supposed to get used to. On the other hand, when it happens, everything is in disarray suddenly. And I don't think this is something you can get used to it, and nor anyone should. But I think absolutely it's important to point out that there is different kind of reaction that Ukrainians have to this video and maybe foreigners have, because if you're a foreigner with a heart and you see something gruesome as this happening in 2023, you're absolutely terrified and shocked and, you know, to the core. And when Ukrainians see that kind of video, I think, of course, people are shocked and traumatized, but there is so much anger that there is no justice done, because unfortunately this is not the first that kind of video we see in the last year or even in 8 years. And I personally saw some of the videos on people's phones with beheadings coming from occupied Eastern Ukraine from 2014 and 2015. And when I saw this particular video, the only thing that I could think of is the research that I did on one of my threads on genocides committed by Russia and how beheadings actually have been and still are regularly used as a war tactic, as a war crime tactics. And I'm just very angry that no justice is done, that they keep doing over and over the same thing. And and people are just appalled, but no action is followed.
Yeah, I do sincerely hope, and I know it's weird to say this now, but I do sincerely hope that one day this will change, if not the inaction, the lack of action on sort of the crimes that Russia has been committing. I still have like this small hope in me that one day it will change, but we'll see.
But you also, have you seen that there are so many people who are actually trying to convert this anger into something productive? And yeah. I don't know, maybe it's my bubble, but have you seen the same happening today?
And even as you said as well, like, even the president has basically kind of said, you know, like, we are all angry and it's horrible, but we need to channel this anger into actions and steps. So I think it's super important. And again, I think this is just goes to show that, like, it sounds horrible, but we're just so tired of time and time again seeing horrible things, you know, hearing horrible things, sharing horrible things that Russia is doing in Ukraine, and not only Ukraine, that now we need to figure out, like, a way to respond to this that can make us feel useful, because it's very easy to start feeling completely useless in a situation in which essentially these things keep happening and we keep having to see them and we keep having to shout about them and we keep having to watch them. And yeah, I basically just think that it's and this has happened from the beginning of the war, right? Remember, like, we saw that a lot of the time when people feel tired or upset or angry, you know, the community has sort of asked and called on people to channel that into something actionable to support the people that are on the front lines, the people that are helping those who have lost their homes, and so on. So if you are watching, if you have seen the video, if you are as frustrated and as shocked by it, then you can join Ukrainians by supporting Ukraine through donations, through anything that you can and are able to offer right now to the cause. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. And we're going to be sharing some of our links to our favorite fundraisers and crowdfunders on our Patreon page. And this is the moment for me to thank to our Patreon sponsors who make possible this show. And your support is crucial. And obligation from us to do this show is kind of something that motivates us every day as well. So we're going to be posting that information on Patreon. But also, if you're just listening as a podcast or live broadcast and you have your favorite fundraisers, favorite causes, just share away, amplify Ukrainian voices, double down on any action you feel will help Ukraine, because this is the way to deal with terrorism, just doubling down on fighting it. And I think this is important.
This season, we're really doubling down on ourselves and on the process of how we are experiencing basically our journey of decolonizing who we are and what we think and just in general ourselves. And that is why this episode, we've invited our friend Nodar back to join us and to continue in the spirit of last season of bridge episodes with allies and friends from other countries. And today we want to talk about Nodar's experience with this as well. So I'll pass back to Maxim and we can jump in to the interview.
Nodar, can you hear us?
Yes. Hi, I can hear you well.
Hey, thanks for joining. Sorry for a bit of really heavy transition, but this is something that happens on live broadcast of Ukrainian Spaces, unfortunately, too often when you have to start from such a dark place. But that's why it's so important probably to hear on days like these voices of your friends. And you're definitely one, but in tradition of Ukrainian Spaces. Can you please introduce yourself to the rest, who you are, where you come from?
First of all, thank you so much for inviting me back. I think that the work you do is absolutely incredible. And I applaud you for your commitment and for to be able to transform your pain and anger into something so beautiful and motivating as this platform is. You're absolutely right. The videos that we all have seen today cannot be ignored. And you're also right about the part that sometimes people from the Western Europe or United States or anybody who has never experienced what Russian colonialism truly stands for will not be able to comprehend the impact of Russian colonialism and Russian terrorism in general. Seeing the video was pretty hard. I mean, it, of course, it's very graphic, and it also indicates the crimes that Russia is currently committing against humanity in Ukraine. But it feels it hits very home to Georgians. The video I've tried to link in the thread of for our conversation is the video of Georgi Antsukhelidze, who is a national hero of Georgia. And he was beaten to death and tortured by so-called Russian soldiers, troops back in 2008, because he was forced to stand on our Georgian flag, and he refused. And you guys all can see the video, the treatment he received from Russian soldiers. So again and again, we see how Russia is trying to punish people, how to punish citizens of the world who just love freedom, who just want to protect their state, who want to live a normal, happy, beautiful life. And I believe it is our duty to stand against it. Again, my name is Noda Rukhadze. I'm an activist, I'm a journalist, I'm a founder of the Shame Movement, and I am delighted to be here.
Thank you so much, Nodar, for sharing that. And I think it's also just, you know, you were saying like we're just protecting our land and our countries. And it's just so important to keep saying like we're not doing anything controversial. Georgians, Ukrainians, other people that were colonized by Russia, all we're trying to do is just live our lives the way that we want to live them. And it's just important to remind people that it's pretty simple what we're trying to achieve here. But I wanted to ask you to tell our audiences a little bit about what our episode is the word in our episode, the name in our episode, Sakartvelo, and why a lot of Georgians have gone back to using that, and what it means for you, and just a little bit about the term itself.
Sure. And seeing Sakartvelo as a title for this episode of Ukrainian Spaces is very beautiful, because it reaffirms that you guys are committed to this cause, and you respect Georgians and Georgia as a state, and it truly means a lot to me. The thing with Sakartvelo is that it's a Georgian name, a Georgian term for Georgia. So Sakartvelo means Georgia, and it stands from as the word Kartveli, which is Georgian. So Sakartvelo is land of Kartvelians, which means land of Georgians. To give you a broader context, Russia, being a dominant imperial, a colonial power, has tried to change Georgia's name in its language for many years. And the thing is that the name Gruzia, which is commonly used in the states previously occupied by the Soviet Union, and the thing with this term is that, of course, it has colonial roots, but in addition to it being colonial, it also has a very dramatic connotation to it. So whenever somebody says Gruzia, it automatically means a heavy burden. This is how we call it, meaning that we Georgians and Georgia were a heavy burden for Russia to take. So we are trying to urge our partners, our friends internationally, to refrain from using the term Gruzia and start calling Georgia or Sakartvelo.
Of course, it's important. I think Ukrainians, a lot of Ukrainians feel very intimate understanding of this fight for the right to be called by our real names, whether it's geography, whether it's our own names that are often misspelled in Russian way. And I feel this simple story, but it kind of illustrates the stakes and the processes that are now are on the go all across the region, all across former colonies. But on the days like this, you see the crimes that were committed also on the Georgian land as well. You hear the stories that you've heard from your childhood, from recent years. how does it make you feel that basically the same shit that happened to you and your people is keeps happening to other countries? And maybe how, whether you were able to galvanize this anger into something productive, or maybe you have some productive example to share, how you basically convert that into something that can help to stop it.
Thank you for the question. I'll just start answering to this question by a small story that I've experienced maybe like 2 or 3 months ago when I visited the United States for the first time. I had a chance to visit many places, like 4 states in the US. And while visiting one of the states, which is called Oklahoma, it's a middle rural state. Not everybody knows that it exists. By accident, at a library, at a local library, I met a Ukrainian woman. Her name was Tatiana, and it is so hard to explain the instant connection we had with her. Like, she has immigrated to the States from, if I remember correctly, from Zaporozhye, like back in the 90s. And even though I was surrounded with beautiful, amazing, talented people who tried to encourage me, with whom I connected and shared my story, none of them matched the energy and understanding that I had with Tatiana, because of course we both shared the same history, we understood each other's past. We bonded through our stories of how we were affected by Russian colonialism. So it was something very beautiful. And I believe that this is a very interesting, even unexplainable connection that Georgians and Ukrainians share forever. Georgia and Ukraine, of course, are like, but Georgia, in this case, we are still struggling under the Russian influence. We are currently having an openly pro-Russian and anti-Western government, which is trying to destroy Georgia's path towards European Union. It increases polarization by their radical rhetoric. It attacks Georgian, Ukrainian government officials. It tries to destroy everything that Georgian society has been united around for the past 30 years since we gained our independence. So when it comes to creating something meaningful and creating something creative and thoughtful, I always think about the fact that how we activists, my organization, and other civil society members in Georgia try to oppose to Russian influence coming from Georgian government. In Georgia, one of the most amazing cases, I believe, and I will try to elaborate on that part in later discussion, was how we resisted Russian law in Georgia back in March. I hope all of you heard about our protests and about our small victory, and this is the thing that we do whenever we feel threatened, whenever we feel that our European future is targeted, whenever we feel that our government is trying to drag us back to Russian influence, to Russian orbit, we march to the streets.
I actually wanted to ask you more about the protests for obvious reasons, because I think the protests in Georgia that we just saw now are, as you say, not new. You know, Georgians have been extremely... Yeah. Powerful at the way that they campaign and in their activism in general. And I just wanted to ask you personally, for you, what did these recent protests that just happened mean to you, and how do you think they're different from the ones that happened before. And also just in general, I think for a lot of people were coming to Twitter to understand a little bit better why they were happening, what was going on. So if you can share any kind of your insights on this, I'll be super happy.
So the thing is, back in the beginning of March, Georgian Dream Party introduced a new bill that would, what they called Bill on Foreign Influence, Agents of Foreign Influence. So this new bill and the new draft legislation would require every organization receiving a foreign funding registering as a foreign agent. Every individual, every media outlet, every political party that would get a foreign funding of more than 20% would automatically be labeled as a foreign agent in Georgia.
Like in Russia as
of
well,
course.
Right?
It was a direct copy of the Russian law. What they tried to do was to introduce another law that was very similar to the first one, but they called the second one an American law. So they tried to confuse society, telling that it is an American law and it won't harm Georgia or Georgia's path towards the European Union. But the thing is that I believe what aggravated the public the most was how was Georgian Dream political party members, parliament members, and government officials' statements were, and how similar those statements were to the Putin statements. So they were repeating the same messaging that Putin did in 2012. We created some amazing video showing the difference and showing the similarities behind the messages, and it went viral. We saw that we needed to win informational war in Georgia against the government to actually win the battle against Russian law. So when it comes to the differences between other rallies and manifestations, something that was outstanding even to me was how involved young Georgians were into these protests. It was remarkable to see that, my sister is in 10th grade, and like all of her classmates, like 15 years old people, 20 years old, like it was filled with youngsters. It was filled with young individuals, and this is one of the biggest differences between the rallies we had before and these rallies. And since in Georgia, as I've already mentioned, opposition and opposition political parties don't really exist. They are all discredited. They've been in Georgian politics for the past 13 years and nobody trusts them. These protests were not led by one or another opposition political party. So every time opposition politicians would try to take on the stage and say something to the public, they were often booed. So it was 100% self-organized, and it didn't have any particular leadership.
And can I ask you, what do you think the sort of the root of this resistance is historically for Georgians? Is there something in the kind of, I don't even know what to say, but what is the root of kind of this powerful ability to protest and push back?
Well, I think it is something we share with Ukrainians, is our love for freedom. It may be a cheesy answer, but it all comes down to loving freedom, loving who you are, loving your independence, and yeah. I get asked this question a lot in Georgian context, and the question is, if our government is so pro-Russian and so bad, why don't we re-elect them, and why Georgian people keep tolerating them? And I just want to give you a clear example of what our government is. If any of you have this kind of question, and every time I speak to a Ukrainian friend, I am always trying to give the example of Yanukovych to compare where Georgian Dream is and what they represent and what they stand for. They are a Russian proxy in Georgia, which is doing everything they can to undermine Georgia's path towards European Union, towards European and NATO integration, and towards just democratic Georgia as it is. Now, Georgian Dream political party has captured all democratic institutions, has discredited through years of polarization and propaganda, has discredited Georgian civil society partly, and a full spectrum of Georgian opposition. In Georgia, we sadly don't have strong people from business which would support protests or political parties or civil initiatives. So now it just comes down to people. It's now just Georgian citizens being a very strong wall, building a very strong wall against our government. So currently, even though big part, majority of Georgians don't like the current regime that has established in Georgia, we are still unable to fully change it because they are in control of everything. But I believe that in recent months, in the next year, we'll be able to somehow unite as a society and say big fuck you to this Russian satellite force that we have in the government.
That's very powerful and cool, because once again it shows a certain pattern in terms of Russia capturing even our democratically elected governments, and the things that are happening in Georgia are unique. But at the fundamental level, a lot of countries in the Russian neighborhood can relate, including Ukraine, how it all goes down when Russia tries to exert full control. So thank you so much, Nodar, once again for educating us. And I'm just pinning a couple of your tweets also from the protests, but another one. I really loved it. You posted a picture from Tbilisi from 1990, where lots of Kartvelians, Georgians gathered to support the restoration of independence of Lithuania. That was back then, you know, Russian tanks were rolled over in Vilnius trying to squash independence, and you know, people died. And Georgians just rallied, even though technically at that point they weren't free themselves. And then watching so many Ukrainian flags being present at recent protests was very touching, inspiring. But my kind of question to this is exactly leading to it. Why there are so many Ukrainian flags on all Georgian protests? What it means for you guys?
God, I will try not to cry like answering this question, but the thing is that we just love Ukraine. We love Ukrainian people. You know, if you ask we have this a term. I don't know if you guys have it in Ukraine, brotherly nation. I'm not sure if it's an accurate translation, like a nation or countries that we consider to be our brothers. And if you go out to the streets of Tbilisi and ask, every second Georgian would answer that it's Ukraine and Ukrainian people. So there's a very strong sentiment to Ukrainian people. And the thing with this tweet of Georgians in Tbilisi marching and supporting the independence of Lithuania in 1990 reminded me of the fact that when in 1989 Russian troops killed innocent Georgian citizens who were demanding Georgia's independence, like months after that event took place, people in Ukrainians gathered in Kiev and supported Georgia's independence and commemorated the lives we lost during that day, during that horrific crime that was committed against Georgian people. So this connection, I have no idea like how to describe it, but it is there. And we know for a fact that, of course, we've been through 2008 and we know how war feels and how injustice feels and how and what Russian terrorism and Russian imperialism really stands for. And the fact that there are so many people in Georgia supporting in Ukraine, the fact that you see Ukrainian flags everywhere in Tbilisi, on every rally, on every building, and the fact that Georgian Legion in Ukraine is the highest, has the highest highest number of individuals if we compare it to other countries, proves my point that there is a very special connection between Ukrainians and Georgians. And yeah, I don't know how else it can be described, to be honest.
And Maxim just messaged me separately, but this is the definition. It's really hard to explain, you're so right, but this is the definition of brotherly nations that is actually based on like love for each other and common kind of passion for freedom and not the definition that Russia is trying to impose on us every single time. It's like the words are the same, but the meaning behind it is just different. Yeah. There is actually this connection that can exist between nations that isn't, but it isn't something that you can enforced
that is
by
imperial,
you know, putting your troops
colonial.
I wanted to bring a couple of comments from our veteran family, and once again, if you're part of our veteran family, you get this opportunity to ask your questions directly during the live show or send them through us. And I just love a manga that one of our veteran sponsors shared in our chat just right now. And it basically has an episode where a Russian spy is exposed because they don't pronounce Georgia's true name, Sakartvelo, and then how they figure out that this is a Russian spy. And our Patreon sponsor writes that after February 24th, after genocide in Ukraine started, this manga was released, publicly available, and became one of the most read mangas in history. But also, apart from this really lovely moment, wanted to anonymously quote one of our Patreon sponsors, and they write that this is a very special episode for them today, because that beheading video today galvanized me even more than I imagined it could be. They write, "I'm with you. I look forward to your podcast, especially because what happened today." So thank you so much, guys. It feels like it means a lot for a lot of people, today's conversation as well.
We wanted to ask Nadar to share sort of, you know, what is, if we're talking, of course, about Ukraine and Sakartvelo and the passion for freedom, but if you were to give one sort of tip or tool for people who are trying to discover, you know, a little bit more about this passion for freedom and these connections, like, what would be one thing that you would tell our listeners to try and do, to try and read, to try and see, or just in general, like, things they can do to understand us?
I would encourage everybody to just I don't know, just read independent sources, read independent materials that don't have like Russian influence or any sort of Russian connection, because every time I've tried to look up the history, I was always wondering about the facts of how Russia has tried to portray Georgia or Ukraine in their source materials. And the thing is that, of course, history is always rewritten. History is always discredited. You guys mentioned how the names of our cities, of our countries, or even our rivers are always changed. And yeah, I would just encourage everybody to speak to the natives, to speak to Georgians and Ukrainians to understand us better. And of course, you can visit Georgia and Ukraine every time.
We talked about a lot about parallels and the same or often similar playbook that Russia uses to subjugate and colonize and invade countries. And 20% of Georgia's territory is occupied de facto by Russia. There are hundreds of thousands of people who are refugees. Millions were, in such a relatively small nation, impacted by this violence. But when you try to explain and unpack and do a terrific job of explaining recent protests and Russian role in it and how it's connected to what is happening to Ukraine in general, is there any kind of simple example or playbook that you bring everyone's attention to it through Georgian experience? Is there anything you would like to, you usually focus to explain foreigners to understand better that this is a pattern? Those are not isolated cases.
Actually, after the war started, Russia invaded Ukraine again. It gave Georgians an additional motivation to bring up all of those atrocities that Russia has done in Georgia, telling international communities that it is not the first time that we see Russia's true face. And you and I have discussed this before, for example, we like Georgian political party, Georgian opposition political party launched a campaign on, there was Abkhazia before Bucha. And I believe this campaign was so strong, in Georgian context, for Georgian society, because not even Georgians know and understand how disgusting, evil, and atrocious were the crimes committed by Russian military in Georgia. Because the things that we try to use very often to tell our international partners and friends that it is not the first time that Russia has been doing this, and is comparing the pictures and comparing the videos, so that even though Abkhazia was more than 30 years ago and Bucha was a year ago, the tactics are the same. The atrocities are the same. People suffer the same. So the whole discussion about these similarities is that if Russia was punished in 2008, Ukraine in 2014 or 2022 wouldn't happen. If Russia was punished in 1990, we wouldn't experience Russia's terroristic actions in the future. So the thing is, and what we are trying to tell our international partners now, very loud, very vocal, is to do everything we can to stop Russia, to destroy Russia as a terroristic state that it represents, so that we don't see another Ukraine in 5 years, so that we don't see another Georgia in 10 years.
And, you know, Maxim and I were talking about this recently. We were just saying that, like, you know, our generation, like, whatever, you know, we're, sorry for my language, we're fucked. Yeah. Like, we've seen it now. Yeah. You know, we've seen the war. There's no way back. But this is our chance to make sure that the next generation will never see it again. Yeah. Like, it's time to for us to really make a point, basically, out of making sure that there is justice for what they're doing. But Nadar, last question to you, because this has been amazing and we could talk forever, I think, about all of this. But we wanted to ask you, basically, like, what does decolonization and taking back control over your own narrative mean for you, like, in practical terms?
Well, I will have to repeat the last answer I had. Full decolonization means the absolute destruction of Russian state. I'm very, very radical and straightforward on that behalf. The only way Russia, like Georgia and Ukraine, will be truly liberated if Russia like stops existing as a terrorist state that it is now.
Thank you so much again for joining us today. It was a special episode for me as well. It's partially Georgian, and you know, I have two words tattooed on my body. One is in Ukrainian, which is Volya, means freedom, and the other one is in Georgian, Tavisu Plega, which is also freedom, means freedom.
Yeah.
And I feel like connected through these words, connected through our indigenous languages, they carry a special meaning for me now. And I was so proud and moved to tears when I saw a Georgian people rallying and protesting just several weeks ago, defending the freedom of choice, defending their freedom to be a sovereign and choosing their own path and their own future. And I felt equally proud being Ukrainian and partially Georgian at that moment. And that's why this episode is also so special to me. Thank you so much for joining, explaining Sakartvelo.
Thank you so much.
Didi Madloba. I will remind everyone else that if you're listening as a podcast, please don't forget to comment and rate. This is extremely important. It helps us to keep trending on podcast platforms, and we're available on 50 plus podcast platforms at the moment. You can find links to all of them, plus to recent Ukrainian Spaces episodes on our website, ukrainianspaces.com. And huge thank you for our Patreon sponsors that make sure that this show is possible, that Ukrainian Spaces is possible. I hope I haven't forgotten anything, Valeria.
No, I think, that's totally everything that we had to cover. And thank you so much to Nadar again for joining us.
And the last thing is Slava Ukraini.
Heroem Slava. And see you all next time.